Hi, I'm Jessica Steinberg.
And I'm Amanda Borchel-Dunn. Welcome to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing.
Your update on what's important in Israel, the Middle East,
and the Jewish world. Hi everyone, I'm Amanda Borchel-Dunn. Today is Tuesday, January 11th, and welcome to the Daily Briefing. I'm joined today by our political correspondent, Tal Schneider, and senior analyst, Chaviv Retegur. Hi to both of you.
Hey, Amanda.
Hi, Amanda.
We have a lot to discuss, as usual, including a face-off in court between two former prime ministers yesterday and the end to othering by the Central Bureau of Statistics. But first, a 6.6 magnitude earthquake happened off the coast of Cyprus and was felt across Israel early this morning. There was no real damage and so far no known casualties. But just a few hours earlier, our Prime Minister Naftali Bennett spoke with Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban. Tal, are there any expected aftershocks from that conversation?
Well, apparently the Foreign Affairs Minister Yair Lapid is planning a trip to Hungary. And that's quite amazing because Lapid, had huge criticism over Netanyahu's chummy relationship with Viktor Orban. Viktor Orban actually visited Israel in a heartwarming trip in 2018. He encountered some demonstration, but mostly he was very warmly welcomed by Israel's leadership. And Yair Lapid, who is a descendant of an Hungarian family who survived the Holocaust, had huge criticism on that relationship, specifically because of Viktor Orban's embrace of Holocaust deniers. Now, Yair Lapid, who is the deputy prime minister, the foreign affairs minister, and the alternate prime minister who will be the prime minister in a year and a half, is planning to visit the country. Very interesting. He actually referred to that in an interview he gave this morning, on Tuesday morning. And he said that as a foreign affairs minister, he has to build relationship. And it's nothing like the relationship with Poland that fell totally out of any kind of, normal route. And it's not the case with Hungary. The country has election in 3 months and he is behaving like a diplomat with both sides and so on. So,
okay, now moving on to a case that is very not diplomatic and a relationship that is quite broken. Yesterday, two former prime ministers faced off in court, former Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and former Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Chaviv, what is this case all about?
Ehud Olmert has been saying about the Netanyahu's very unpleasant things. He has argued that he believes they are true, namely that the Netanyahu's as a family, and specifically Sarah and Yair, Benjamin Netanyahu's wife and son, are mentally ill. And he's made some specific claims about hospitalization and things like that. And the Netanyahu's are saying these are fictions, these are complete lies. Olmert knows these are lies, and they're actually suing him essentially for libel. As Tal was telling us this morning, as Man Israel, our Hebrew language sister site, there's an article that argues that Olmert is quite likely to lose the case, which with Israeli libel law is an extraordinary statement against Olmert, because it is hard to lose a libel case. There are a lot of protections. If you're speaking truth, if you believe you're speaking truth, you can't be you can't lose your libel case. In other words, the Netanyahu's will show that Olmert could not have believed he was telling the truth, that he was definitely lying, and they could show it in court. And the evidence, the onus is on them in many ways to show intent on Olmert's side. And so people watching this from outside think Olmert is going to lose this case. That says a lot. I want to say there's the Netanyahu family, for understandable reasons, much of the time, causes an enormous amount of anxiety and anger and frustration and bitterness among a lot of the critics. We just had a similar case with a man named Igal Sarna, who wrote on Facebook. He's a prominent, well-known journalist, and he wrote on Facebook about an event in which Sarah Netanyahu, in one of her alleged, insanity fits, while the prime minister's motorcade was driving up the highway to Jerusalem, forced the motorcade to stop on the side of the road in her anger at her husband. And there's the Shabak, and there's the entirety of the prime minister's motorcade sitting waiting for her. Now, that is an event that never happened. And Netanyahu sued Yigal Salna, and Yigal Salna lost and had to admit he had lost and actually had to pay tens of thousands of shekels. That's a bad incident. That's a bad moment, because it means that when we journalists and the political left, as their political critics, come to talk about the Netanyahu family, we're doing it from this emotional, political, sociological, I don't know what it is, place where there's so much hatred, it's hard to speak directly to it. There's one last thing I want to say. It is commonly believed, I have not written about Sara Netanyahu's alleged mental illness, but because I don't understand it. I don't know how to sift through the politics and the spin to get to any kind of reality. But it is commonly believed in the Likud, and I have spoken to cabinet ministers who sat waiting for a cabinet meeting and inside the prime minister's office heard screaming, that there is a lot of anxiety there, that this is a person who struggles with, maybe with mental issues. That is something believed among Netanyahu's friends and allies as well.
Haviv, let me just add here that she lost two court cases in employment claims against her for harassing and, taking advantage of employees. Those were two different court cases in Israel's employment court, handled by, on a different time. And in both cases, she lost. The judges believe the workers in her state-owned residence, that she abused workers, was yelling at them. And you see along the line of the, ruling, you see along the line of the rulings, the phenomenon of yelling, losing control, some, issues that you may treat as maybe mentally ill behavior, if you want. And it's in the court. I mean, it's not even us, you and me, being, observing this.
Tal, I was once a security guard in the government for ministers, and the guards talk amongst themselves about ministers. And there are ministers who seem very calm and quiet, but when it comes to people who work for them, junior people like their security guards, they start yelling and screaming. And some people, I'm not going to name names now, and anyway, it was 20 years ago, but the fact, I agree with you, specifically her shouting abusively at employees was part of the case, and she lost. And as I'm saying, allies of Netanyahu have expressed concerns over the years about her influence over him, combined with her own mental issues, to the point where one cabinet minister once said to me, if she wasn't his wife, there's a tragedy here, because if she wasn't his wife, she would have gotten the help she needs. Then along come journalists, politicians, left-wing politicians, and lie through their nose trying to make up these stories about just how horrifying she is. So there are these two toxic dynamics all coming into sort of intersecting in this court case. And it's something deeply, I think, unpleasant. If there is truth to the mental illness problem, then we should be dealing with it very differently, I think.
Okay, we will update on this as the trial progresses. We're off to a short break now.
Hey, it's Jessica Steinberg. If you have an important message you'd like to share with people who care deeply about Israel and the Jewish world, there's really no better way to do that than by advertising in our podcasts. Reach the Times of Israel's unique community with an audio ad. For more information, email ads@timesofisrael.com. That's ads@timesofisrael.com.
I got married this Monday in the middle of a war.
You are not a soldier anymore. You are 50 years old. What is the matter with you?
It's like a couple of kilometers from here. Like, my friend has a 4x4. Let's just go cut across the fields and go get him.
Israel Stories, Wartime Diaries. Voices that try to capture slivers of life right now.
And he told me, take with you a sleeping bag and a tent and just go.
I texted him after I was told that he was killed.
From their eyes, I was a traitor.
Everybody needs their blankie, their teddy bear, something to make them feel safe.
I'm just another grandfather looking after his grandchild while his son is off at war.
These children of Hamas now will be the killer of my children.
I desperately wanted to talk about sex during my eulogy for Ido.
Everyone has to choose to be optimistic because we don't have room for pessimism.
Check out Israel's Story wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Now, Tal, you brought a very interesting story yesterday about the Central Bureau of Statistics stopping the category of quote-unquote other for those who are perhaps not halachically Jewish, but maybe are related to Jews, or I wonder, could they have converted to Judaism through other streams such as Reform Judaism?
Well, your question is a big one. The story doesn't deal with the conversion issue. It's only about the Israel Statistics Bureau changing the definitions in its own publications. It started in Rosh Hashanah last September when the chief statistician of Israel presented to the cabinet the numbers, and he said to the new government, back then they were like 3 months in, he told them, we have 6.9 million Jews, 1.9 million Arabs, and then we have another 466,000, that's about 5% of the populations, that are others. And one of the ministers, Elazar Stern, he's the intelligence minister, went up to the, bureau and asked them, what do you mean by others? And they said, this is people who are not Jews and not Arabs. So apparently those 5% are mostly, many of them are Russian immigrants who came to Israel under the law of return because they were married to a Jew or, kids of a Jew. But according to Israel's halakha, the Torah rule, according to that, they cannot be converted or they cannot be considered as Jews because they were born to a Jew father and so on. I don't want to go into the conversion rules, but they live in Israel. They some of them have already been born here. They serve in the military. They define themselves as Israelis. Most of them define themselves as Jews. They are traditional and so on. But yet in the government registry, they're not registered as Jews. And it causes huge problems for them for marriage and so on. And this government is trying to tackle this issue, by way of changing the conversion law under Matan Kahana. And I think we already discussed that in prior podcast. And our listeners can go on and look for the Matan Kahana interview that David Horvitz and I conducted like a month ago, or maybe 2 months ago. And they are trying to tackle this from this way of changing the definitions under the Bureau of Statistics. It's very interesting because the Bureau of Statistics already announced and gave Minister Stern an answer saying, yes, we are changing. According to your request, we will definitely go ahead and change the definitions, the subcategories. Instead of having just three categories, as I said, Jews, Arabs, and others, we will have Jews with their extended families and Arabs. And Jews and their extended families will be, that will include those half a million people. And if you want to take it a step further, it will change Israel demographics announcement next time we will have a demographic announcement. Because right now the Jews are 74% of the population and the Arabs are 21% and the others are 5%. If you put the others within the extended Jewish family, then you have almost 79% Jews and their families.
Okay, that's interesting, and it's easy to manipulate the numbers and the labels, but I wonder if this will extend eventually to the Interior Ministry. Chaviv?
I like this move because it's a move of inclusion. It doesn't actually change the demographic numbers in the simple sense that it recognizes how Israelis think of themselves. The vast majority of the others are the Russian, as it's just like Tal said. I mean, they're the huge majority of that 5%. They're the Russian kids and spouses and parents of people who made Aliyah as Jews. They are eligible for Aliyah. Jews are not the only people who are eligible under Israel's law of return, but their families, obviously, and those are the non-Jewish family members. Many of them are born here, they speak Hebrew, they think they're Jews, they feel like Jews, they marry Jews, they have to go to a courthouse in Cyprus to do so, but that's a 40-minute flight, so it's not such a big deal. And this recognizes that reality, which is to say, it doesn't just call them other, which is a category forced on the Central Bureau of Statistics and on the Interior Ministry by the rabbinate and by the Haredim. We're not going to get into the halachic question and how halacha and Israeli law should or should not intersect. But it just recognizes a simple social reality. If somebody is counting the demographics to figure out when the country is no longer Jewish, they should, by their own self-definition of these people, count them among the Jews. In other words, if that is the issue, then this just recognizes an existing reality. As for the Interior Ministry, I think that if the Interior Ministry is not thinking of it this way, then it's being very silly. It makes sense to me. And it depends, frankly, on who the Interior Minister will be, in a few years' time when this issue comes up in the Interior Ministry.
Let me just add, Amanda, that, out of the 500,000 others, about 65% are Russians, as said. I mean, this is the vast majority. Most of them are serving in Israel's military under the mandatory service. So they serve in the military, they do reserve duty, they may, die in battle and so on. And another way to think about it is, if you ask them, they are very happy about this move, even though it's just declarative. They think that this may lead to a change or maybe a social change in the way Israel treat them. So I just saw posts on Facebook from people who are, were born here or were brought to Israel as babies, and they're joyed. They think this is a very important announcement.
We are going to stop right now because that is optimistic, and we so rarely get to end on an optimistic note here. So thank you, both of you.
Feels wrong somehow to end on optimism.
Chaviv, save it for next time. Okay, thank you, both of you, for joining me today.
Thank you, Amanda.
Thank you, Amanda.
Thanks for listening to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing, and thanks to our producer, Gilad Brownstein, and to Gili Amar for this out-of-this-world music.
You can find us daily wherever you find your podcasts.
And on our mothership, timesofisrael.com. Like what you hear? Consider rating us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify to spread the word.
And be sure to check out our weekly feature, Times Will Tell, released every Friday. Until next time.
Shalom.
Hi, it's Sarah Tuttle Singer from the Times of Israel. Come join our community and support fast and fair independent journalism. You can sign up with the link at the bottom of every single article on the site.